We conclude our Lenten series today of first-person sermons, where we will have a visit from Simon of Cyrene. I know that for Rick and I, we have had a great time putting together the sermon series this year, and I hope that it's been enjoyable for you as well. Listen for the word of God from Mark chapter 15. Then they led him out to crucify him. They compelled a passerby who was coming in from the country to carry his cross. It was Simon of Cyrene, the father of Alexander and Rufus. Then they brought Jesus to the place called Golgotha, which means the place of a skull. And they offered him wine mixed with myrrh, but he did not take it. And they crucified him and divided his clothes among them, casting lots to decide what each should take. It was 9 o'clock in the morning when they crucified him. The inscription of the charge against him read, "The King of the Jews." And with him they crucified two bandits, one on his right and one on his left. Those who passed by derided him, shaking their heads and saying, "Aha, you who would destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, save yourself and come down from the cross." In the same way, the chief priests, along with the scribes, were also mocking him among themselves and saying, "He saved others. He cannot save himself." When the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of James and Salome, brought spices so that they might go and anoint him. And very early on the first day of the week, when the sun had risen, they went to the tomb. They had been saying to one another, "Who will roll away the stone for us from the entrance to the tomb?" When they looked up, they saw that the stone, which was very large, had already been rolled back. As they entered the tomb, they saw a young man dressed in a white robe, sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed. But he said to them, "Do not be alarmed. You were looking for Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified. He has been raised. He is not here. Look, there is the place they laid him. But go tell his disciples and Peter that he is going ahead of you to Galilee. There you will see him just as he told you." So they went out and fled from the tomb, for terror and amazement had seized them. And they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Wow, I am impressed. Two services, both of them this full. Is it like this every week? And the music. You know, if it wasn't for the music, I would have thought that you were here just to see me. I'm Simon of Cyrene, by the way. And I appreciate the privilege of being here to share my story with you. You know, I wonder what Jesus would think were he here on this Sunday worship. I was visiting with one of your members recently who shared with me this series of movies about this biblical, he was an archaeologist, kind of a fortune hunter almost. He brandished a whip. Indiana Jones, that's right, it was Indiana Jones. And apparently there's a whole series of movies about Indiana Jones. And in one of them, he told me that the challenge was to locate the Holy Grail. Does that ring a bell with anyone? You know, the Holy Grail is that chalice which Jesus, it said, used at the Last Supper. And I haven't seen the movie, but I understand that towards the end of it, there they are in a cave, and there are, I don't know how many, various chalices, and the task is to pick which one is the real Holy Grail. And Indiana Jones's father is there, and before the villains make a choice, he says, "Choose wisely." Does that ring a bell? Does anybody remember that? Choose wisely. You know, in a real sense, the story surrounding the last days of Jesus of Nazareth is a story of choices. Choices people made. When Jesus proved not to be the man Judas Iscariot thought he was, Judas chose to betray him. Peter, the rock, fearing for his life, chose to deny that he even knew Jesus. The disciples chose to desert him in his time of need. Pontius Pilate yielded to the wishes of the religious establishment and chose to issue the order of crucifixion. Caiaphas and the other religious leaders chose to preserve their authority by getting rid of this rabble-rouser. The choices made by these and other people are all remembered by those who call themselves Christians, especially at this time of year. And I am one of those people. I am also remembered today, not because of a choice I made, but because of a choice, a burden that was placed upon me. You see, I had no choice when the Roman soldier picked me out of the crowd along what you today call the Via Dolorosa in Jerusalem and compelled me to carry the cross beam of the one you call Christ, Messiah. Yes, I am Simon of Cyrene, and I suppose I will forever be remembered by the circumstances which resulted in me carrying the cross of a condemned man. Cyrene is in North Africa, in what you today call Libya. You might understand better if I tell you that Cyrene was near the city of Benghazi, that city where not only was one of the great battles of World War II fought, but has been in the news more recently for the attack a couple of years ago, as I understand it, on the U.S. diplomatic mission there. Cyrene was located some 1,000 miles from Jerusalem. There had been a devout colony of believers in Yahweh for centuries there, dating back to one of the many times where my ancestors were forced to flee from the homeland due to the oppression of Syria or Assyria or Babylonia. And the longing of every child of Israel was to someday, at least once in a lifetime, to journey to Jerusalem to eat the Passover meal there, to be present in the capital city for the Passover festival. And so for this particular year, I made arrangements to be in Jerusalem. Long had been the plans in formulation. Long was the journey. Great was the expense, financially and physically. How would you fare traveling from here to, say, Kansas City on foot or by camel? Yet the plans had gone well, for I was arriving in Jerusalem early on Friday morning in time to go to the temple and offer there the necessary sacrifices prior to the start of Passover, which would begin at sundown. It was incredible being in Jerusalem at the time of the Passover. As I mentioned, Jews tried to make it to Jerusalem for the festivals, and Passover was the greatest of all the festivals, as it marked the deliverance by God of the Hebrew nation enslaved in Egypt. It is ironic that though the Jews were not slaves during the time of Jesus, they lived under Roman occupation, which helps to explain the volatile political atmosphere, especially at festival times. For example, I learned that Pontius Pilate, who I understand was also a visitor during your Encounter with Jesus series, the Roman procurator in Judea, normally spent his time on the seacoast in luxury, making his way to Jerusalem only during high festival times, in case of trouble. You see, if he didn't control things, Caesar would be quick in replacing them. And you know what that means? Sayonara to the life of luxury. Maybe sayonara to life itself. Yes, I was excited to be in Jerusalem. The smell of lambs being sacrificed, the city teeming with people, engaging in all sorts of activity. It was just an electric atmosphere. Jerusalem, as you perhaps know, is a magnificent city in and of itself, especially to the Jew. At that time, the temple and colonnade courtyard were especially magnificent. There was an electric air as people moved through the gates of the walled city. As I approached the city, my attention was diverted by a procession of people leaving the city, moving away from the city center. Becoming curious, I walked over, only to discover it was, in essence, a funeral procession for three men, each carrying the beam for their cross. I remember thinking, couldn't this wait until after Passover? In front of the three, a soldier carried a placard on which was written the crime for which each was charged. The one that caught my eye read, "King of the Jews." I was puzzled. The man convicted of this crime was a horrible mess, totally exhausted, a thoroughly beaten man. His energy was spent. His hair was matted with dry blood, caused, I suppose, by a crown of thorns that someone had crushed down around his skull. His eyes seemed sad, lonely, defeated. The sight of his cloak clinging to his back, which looked a bloody mess, was especially ghastly. It was obvious he had been severely scourged. No wonder he was exhausted. He began to stagger under the weight of the cross, and it became apparent in his weakened state that he was not going to be able to carry it much further. Nobody stepped forward to help. I became curious as to what the guards would do. Beating him surely wouldn't help. Exhorting him to get it in gear, to pull himself up by the bootstraps, that would have been useless in his weakened state. All of a sudden, I felt two arms grabbing me. "You carry his cross." Thrown into the middle of the procession, I found myself staring into the eyes of the one you call Christ. I will never forget that look of pain. Not simply physical pain, but pain that wells up deep, deep from within. That deep, deep pain of sadness. Unforgettable. I was a man of the world enough to know that resisting would have been useless unless I wanted to lose my life. So I carried his cross. Besides, there was something about him, his eyes. I carried the cross of the one you call Lord and Savior. Mind you, I didn't choose it. It was thrust upon me. Unwittingly, I did literally what Christians are called to do, to pick up their cross and follow Christ. The cross I bore was the cross of Christ Himself. Tradition indicates that I became a follower and even established a church in my home in Cyrene. The fact that I am named, given a name, Simon of Cyrene, by your gospel writers, and even identified by Mark as the father of Alexander and Rufus, indicates some sort of ongoing relationship with me. Circumstance reared its head in my life, and I was changed. You know, I'm not the only one whose life has been changed by circumstance. At some point, circumstance affects everyone. Some of you have had your life shattered by a phone call in the middle of the night telling you a loved one has been in an accident, even died. Others of you have had your foundation shaken after a visit to a doctor. Or maybe you have been told by your spouse that he or she no longer wants to be married to you. Or maybe you have been fired from your job. Circumstances which you have not chosen, but circumstances with which you must deal. And make no mistake, these circumstances change you in some form or another, just as they changed me. Circumstance affects everyone at some point or another. It's just a matter of when and how serious. And the challenge becomes, how do I respond to this circumstance? How do I handle this situation which I haven't chosen but which has been thrust upon me? When major life changes occur which are beyond our control, you know, it's easy to become bitter, cynical, angry. Normal responses, to be sure. But if allowed to fester, to not be addressed in some healthy, therapeutic manner, they tend to rob us of the very joy of living. And hey, each of us only have one life to live. And in reality, how we respond to circumstances not of our own choosing says a lot about who we are, whose we are, and the depth of our faith. But you know, circumstances may jump into your life in not quite so dramatic a way. Sometimes our plans are interrupted by less dramatic instances. I dare say that as a minister, Reverend Brown, at one time or another, you have had plans to do something. Maybe you have a tea time this afternoon, 1 o'clock tea time, let's say. And in through the church door walks a person in need, someone needing a helping hand. And at some level, you've probably been more than a bit irritated, agitated. Your plans are being interrupted. Maybe you have had a similar experience. But followers of the way, followers of Jesus, beware lest when plans are made and you are on your way and you are looking forward to something and circumstances force a change because someone is crying out to you for help. Be careful lest resentment and bitterness fill your life when your plans are changed by circumstance. For it just may be that the Lord of life Himself, Jesus the Christ, is seeking to make Himself known to you through such interruptions, through such circumstances. Today is Easter. And though I joked earlier about what Jesus would think were He here, the Christian affirmation is He is here. That the same power that raised Jesus from the dead is available to you today to mold, to comfort, to challenge. So from one who literally carried the cross of Christ, whose life was changed by circumstance, I invite you to experience this resurrection power in all its fullness. Friends, someday you will come to the latter years of your life, as did I. And when you do so, the memories of which you will be most grateful will not be the recollection of prizes won, will not be the recollection of discomforts avoided. Rather, the memories which will bring rejoicing will be the recollection of bearing the cross for someone else, the recollection of gifts given, not received, the recollection of the word of sympathy spoken, the recollection of self-denial to assist someone in need. If you so live, then one day you will be as thankful as I, Simon of Cyrene, for the circumstances leading to a changed life. May God continue to bless your life, your Easter celebrations. Now and always.